Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. Well, today is the first part of July, and many people are out this weekend celebrating the 4th of July, at least in the area of the United States. A lot of the other countries throughout the world have no knowledge of the 4th of July and don't celebrate it. It's specifically an American holiday. It's come down because it was a particular date that was mentioned on a document. It wasn't the date the document was signed or ratified or anything, because it wasn't all that an official document. It was the Declaration of Independence. And it talks about the 4th of July in that document, 1776. And because of that, we have this holiday, and everybody gets together and they have barbecues and watermelon. They fire off fireworks and everybody celebrates. And sometimes old friends and family members get together that don't see each other much of the year. That idea of having holidays like that has been a major part of free societies for millenniums. The ancient Israel's, they had such holidays. They call them feasts, Feasts of the Tabernacle, which is also called the Feast of Booths, also called the Feast of Tents. And basically, everybody went camping for a week. And you got to see friends and relatives you hadn't seen in many years, because they had central locations where everybody went to camp. This did a number of things for Israel. It allowed everybody to have and own a tent. And everybody also knew how to go camping. And sons and daughters of families got to meet new sons and daughters of other families. And so you weren't always marrying the girl next door. You might marry a girl four or five towns away. And then that would tie those two towns together through the union of that marriage. You knew the people in your town. You grew up with them. You worked with them. They helped you out. You helped them out. And bonds of society grew because you depended upon one another. But what's that town, 50 miles, 100 miles away to you? Well, if your son or grandsons are living there, it's part of your family. And so because it's a part of your family, the community you live in thinks that that community is also important. And this was a mysterious way in which Israel tied itself together throughout the nation and remained a nation. You couldn't attack that town over there without the people, five towns away saying, hey, we got relatives there. We got friends there. We got grandsons and nephews and nieces there. And we're going to help them out. And so those feasts made the country stronger. And why was that important? Because they weren't bound together by social contracts. Most nations today are bound together by social contracts or by dictators with military powers that force them to comply with the will of the dictator. But generally speaking, nations are bound together by social contracts. Now, that's not a new idea. Cain had the same idea. Nimrod had the same idea. Pharaoh had the same idea. Caesar had the same idea. But there has always been this other idea of being bound together by faith, hope, and charity. And of course, that's the kingdom of heaven. That's the kingdom of God. That is the government of God, where men are not bound together by covenants and contracts and agreements that subjugate them to the will of others. But they are bound together by faith, hope, and charity. Well, that doesn't just happen, faith, hope, and charity. I mean, it used to be in this community, there was a thing down the road called the Grange Hall. We helped tear it down many, many years ago when we first came to the community because they weren't using it anymore. Somebody wanted to use it for a store and hay. And they didn't go there anymore to hear music made by locals and to have dances and to meet with one another. They didn't need the Grange Hall for that. They had TV. We could just sit home and watch TV, or we could listen to the radio, and we don't need the Grange Hall. And that's what happened to the community. It kind of divided. It's still a pretty strong community by standards in America today. I've mentioned before about the big fire that came through here a few years ago, and we didn't lose any homes because community members stood between the flames and the homes of the locals. They didn't evacuate. They tried to evacuate us here at this place, and we said, we're not going. Why would we evacuate? We already had an agreement with all the local people who were coming to be firefighters to gather any trucks. We have, you know, volunteer fire departments here. There were other fire departments that eventually came to park in our fields because they were green and they were open and there were no trees and they would be the safest place to go if there was a fire. And here comes the deputy sheriff trying to evacuate us in case of a fire. We're the ones that are stopping the fire. And it was kind of funny. I guess the news of our refusal to evacuate spread all over. They didn't know what to do with us. We hear lately a lot of people have been evacuated from their homes, and then their homes were busted into. Actually, some of their homes were busted in by the local authorities who went into gun safes and took all their guns out. And some people never got some of their property back. Because they weren't allowed to protect it themselves as a community. And they were ill-prepared as a community to say, no, we're not going. We're here to help one another. We are our FEMA. We are our Social Security. We are the community that protects this community because we are bound together by mutual loyalty, faith, hope, and charity. Those things are all gone out the window in today's society and many countries throughout the world. It's not the community that helps one another. It's certainly not the church that you look to for salvation in the case of national disaster or local disaster. You look to the centralized government. Well, that's the way they did it in the days when they were in bondage in Egypt. That's the way they did it when they were in the city of Cain or in Nimrod's Babylon. The government was there to take care of you. The problem is, in America, we're supposed to be a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. But in fact, that's not what we have become. In early America, they were bound together as a nation, as I said, but not by social contract. They were bound together by the difficulties that arise from facing a wilderness alone with nothing but you and your community to back you up. The idea of some centralized government coming and saving the day while we sit comfortably in our homes or wherever they put us in some astrodome or shelter just didn't exist in the early Americas. In the early Americas, you had to be there for each other. You were a Minuteman because you knew you needed your neighbor to be a Minuteman for you. So you dropped everything to come to his aid in hope that he would drop everything and come to your aids. Now, America was called a republic. Some people think that the Constitution created a republic, but that's absolutely absurd. Anybody who understood what a pure republic is, that's not what Benjamin Franklin was talking about. We had a republic before anybody met to put together the Constitution. We had a republic back in the days before anybody wrote the Declaration of Independence. They actually sent troops here to America to, quote unquote, defend the American Republic. Because America was a republic, because it was a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. They defended themselves. They took care of themselves. They had some unique statuses that most people are completely unaware of because they have gone to public school. I mentioned Israel, ancient Israel, not what Israel became at the time of Christ. That was not the Israel of Moses. Those Pharisees had mistranslated the Bible and twisted the meaning of the Bible and turned what was a sovereign government into a subjective government, where the citizens were subject to the authority of government and compelled to make offerings according to the will of some legislature, which they called the Sanhedrin. The people were no longer sovereign, and the king shared power with this legislature that ruled over the people, made law for the people. And Christ came and changed all that, and how he did that, most people are completely unaware of also, because men have continued to go about translating and interpreting the scriptures to draw the people's minds in a particular direction that simply is not the truth. Now, some scholars regard the ancient confederation of Hebrew, and I'm quoting here, tribes that endured in Palestine from the 15th century BC until a monarch was established in 1020 BC as an embryonic republic. That would make the ancient Israelite Commonwealth the earliest republic in history and one of the oldest democracies, except for slaves and women. All members of the community had a voice in the selection of their administrators and were eligible for political office. Now, before the kings, who were the administrators? Who were the men who held political office? Well, the only government that is clearly seen, other than in the case of military militias gathering together, were the Levites. The Levites were a government. They were public servants, but they were actually servants. They could not compel the offerings of the people. They provided the benefits. They served the congregations, the tents of the congregation, the tabernacles of the congregation. Tabernacles and tents are the same word. Wherever you see tabernacles, you're seeing the word tent or tents. And so the tabernacle of the congregation are the tents of the congregation, and that's what they served. And they were tithed to according to their service, not because you owed 10% of what you had to them, but because you were gathered together in congregations of 10, and a share of what you had was offered to the Levite in return for his service as the government service of the day. You weren't bound to him by contract to pay him. You were bound to him by common sense, by faith, hope, and charity, and bound to each other for the same reason, not by social contract. The Bible was not establishing a religion, but a government. Because, and I quote here again, I quote John Quincy Adams, "The law given from Sinai was a civil and municipal as well as moral and religious code." Now, if you were back in 1918 in the United States on April 3rd and sitting in Congress, you would have heard read to you out loud, "I believe in the United States of America as a government whose just powers are derived from the consent of the governed, a democracy in a republic." That was the American creed that they were reading, because America has a creed. Because America, the United States specifically, because America and United States are not necessarily synonymous terms, the United States has a creed because it is a religious organization requiring faith, or we often say allegiance. It wants you to believe in it and look to it and pray to it. Yes, that's right. Application is prayer to it for your salvation, for your needs in the times of floods, famines. But Christ offered you another kingdom, another way to survive in society without praying to benefactors who exercise authority one over the other. Now, in America, millions struggled and died in an attempt to settle a land and create a viable republic of free souls under God. Representatives of the United Colonies, the year before 1776, July 4th, said on July 6th in 1775, referring to the explained purposes of that struggle, "Our forefathers, inhabitants of the island of Great Britain, left their native land to seek on these shores a residence for civil and religious freedom." Now, where are you a resident? Are you a resident in a place where you have religious and civil freedom? are you resident in a place where you are a subject resident, where someone else decides what you can do civilly and what you can do even religiously? You know, George Washington, in his general order of July 9th, 1776, this is a few days after July 4th, speaks of rights and liberties already possessed and to be defended as Christians when he said the general hopes and trusts that every officer and man will endeavor so to live and act as becomes a Christian soldier defending the dearest rights and liberties in his country. Rights and liberties stemming from the Constitution? No, it didn't exist yet. Rights and liberties stemming from what? We are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, not by any constitution or contract made between men. Our rights do not stem from constitutions. Privileges may stem from those constitutions written by men, but not rights, not rights endowed by our Creator. Samuel Adams, very interesting fellow, states on August 1, 1776, within 1 month of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, our union is complete, our Constitution composed, established, and approved. You are now the guardians of your own liberties. You are the guardians of your own liberties. We may justly address you as the decemviri did the Romans and say, nothing that we propose can pass into law without your consent. Be yourself, O America, the author of those laws on which your happiness depends. Now, he's not talking to Congress. He's talking to the individual. Well, how does the individual compose law? Well, I cannot compose law for you. But in a jury of my peers, fact and law can be determined. And we can quote that called precedent in dealing with other trials that might come down in the future between citizens of a free nation. When my father first entered the law, he often was quoting precedent, what other juries had decided. Why? Because that is the law. They are expressing the law, and we have to determine whether it applies here or there. Legislatures may pass laws, but we can overrule them in a jury of our peers that is not sworn under oath to abide by the laws of the legislature in an administrative court. That is actually what's going on now, is that you're in an administrative courts, and the juries all raise their right hand and take oaths that they will abide by the laws of the legislature. They waive their right to determine fact and law. That was a major part of the early American Revolution. And everybody out there setting off their firecrackers and celebrating the 4th of July, almost none of them understand that right and responsibility that juries once carried in America. And because they don't understand that, they have lost a great deal of their freedom and allow for a great deal of abuse through the courts today. Here's Samuel Adams is telling us how it worked, but we don't hear. The Constitution had already been formed, not the U.S. Constitution. That didn't come for many, many years later. John Adams had earlier said, Massachusetts Bay Charter carried it to America. They got out of the English realm, dominion, state, empire, call it by what name you will, and out of the legal jurisdiction of the Parliament. The king might by his writ of proclamation have commanded him to return, in other words, those early Americans, but he did not. By this interpretation, the charters accorded Americans all the rights and privileges of a natural, freeborn subject of Great Britain and gave colonial assemblies the sole right of imposing taxes. And that the sole right of imposing taxes was extremely limited. They couldn't impose an income tax. They couldn't impose even a property tax. If we knew our real American history, Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys, what they were doing, they wanted everybody to actually own the land, have 10-year title in the land. which would make it untaxable even by the legislature, and certainly by the king. What our colonial charters were doing, most people do not understand. Many people have written about that recently, and they don't quite comprehend some of the major phrases found in some of those charters. They were saying you can be free, basically, and have no law except by the consent of the free man. But a free man actually owned the land. People in America, nobody, almost nobody in the United States today owns the land they live on. They have legal title. And we go through this in law versus legal in the covenants of the gods. Legal title does not include the beneficial interest, the right to use the land. And you're not considered to be the true owners of the land if you only have legal title. You have it by government suffrage. That's right. You don't own the land like Americans were trying to do. Therefore, you have again waived another responsibility and lost another right. Through lack of understanding, through lack of proper deed and activity of a Christian soldier. It was not the Constitution, but the charters that were proclaimed by the early Americans as to be the source and basis of their freedom, besides the Bible that they also declared. Accordingly, when Americans were told that they had no constitutional basis for their claim of execution from the parliamentary authority, they answered, "Our charters have done it absolutely." And if one protests, remarked a Tory, this is in a newspaper article, "the answer is you are an enemy of America and ought to have your brains beat out." Now, that was a Tory. They're proclaiming the charters have done it for us. You wouldn't know that from studying modern American history. What were those charters? And of course, it really wasn't the charters themselves. It's what we were allowed to do. We were actually able to own land. Untaxable in early America by any act of legislature. What was that early America that Cromwell sent troops here to protect, the early American Republic, long before 1776? What is a republic? A republic, by one definition, is a commonwealth, that form of government in which administration of affairs is open to all the citizens. In another sense, it signifies the state independently of its government. Well, that's Hebrew. That's the Israelites. Their government was independent of them and them independent of their government, because they were the government and the bureaucracy was not. And we'll explain to you more how this works when we return to Keys of the Kingdom.